Several years ago, Ann Murray had a hit song that went in part, "Just once I'd like to see the headline say, not much to print today. Can't find nothing bad to say, for nobody robbed a liquor store on the lower part of town. Nobody OD'd, nobody burned a single building down. Nobody fired a shot in anger, nobody had to die in vain. Sure could use a little good news today." Well, according to St. Paul, the church is the steward or the caretaker or the convener or the conduit of good news. And if the world is short on good news, I guess it means that you and I, who belong to the Christian community, have not done our jobs well. We've survived Halloween, and now we are at All Saints' Day. And so I would like to take this opportunity of All Saints' Day to proclaim to you what I think is profound, profound good news, incredible good news. It's the good news of faith, the good news of hope, the good news of love. Now abide these three, faith, hope, and love, and the greatest of these is love. I have good news, real good news for you. Faith is greater than doubt. The Bible is full of people who had great faith. The author of Hebrews in the 11th chapter makes a long list of those who lived by faith. By faith, Noah built a boat. By faith, Abraham fathered a nation. By faith, Moses liberated his people. By faith, Joshua fought the battle of Jericho. And by faith, the saints of history conquered kingdoms, administered justice, shut the mouths of lions, and quench the fury of flames. In fact, almost everything is possible when you live your life by faith. Almost everything is possible when you live your life by faith. Do you believe that? I'll let you think about it a little while. Do you believe that? Well, a couple of you do. Thomas was the disciple that had to be shown before he believed anything. And Jesus offered him an opportunity to see for himself. But it's the words after that that come to my mind, what Jesus said to Thomas on that occasion of that resurrection appearance. "Thomas, you see, you believe because you've seen. But blessed are those who have not seen and yet have the courage to believe." Blessed are those who have not seen, but have the courage to believe. You see, faith is the bird that sees the light while it's still night. Faith is the person struggling between yes and no who lands on yes. Faith is the courage to start walking without MapQuest to give you directions. Faith is the way, y'all get that sometime next week. Faith, you're a tough crowd today at 11 o'clock. Faith is a way of looking at what is seen and believing that underneath the surface there's vastly more than can be seen. That's what faith is all about. Now, nobody ever said faith is easy. It's difficult. It's not comfortable. Sometimes it's not convenient. All the great saints of history have struggled with their faith. All the great saints of history struggle with their faith. John Wesley, after his great conversion, and some years after starting the Methodist movement, went to his Moravian friends and confessed that he had lost his faith. "I guess I should quit," he said. "I no longer can really grasp this faith that I believe so much." And his mentor, Peter Bowler, helped him out at that point by saying to him, John, preach the faith until you have it, and then you'll be able to preach the faith because you have it. Preach the faith until you have it, and then you can preach the faith because you have it. To live is to struggle, to believe is to doubt. But faith that abides keeps looking up, keeps looking up, keeps looking all the way up. It keeps believing even when life is down. So I say to somebody in the lowlands of strife today, keep looking up. Keep looking up. Whatever you do in your life, keep looking up. Faith is worth it for you. I've got good news for you today. Really, really good news. The most important news you can ever know. And that is that hope is deeper than despair. It was the philosopher Moltmann who says Christianity is completely and entirely and utterly hope. A looking forward to what is yet to come. A looking forward to what is yet to come. St. Francis taught his people to pray, where there is despair, let us sow hope. Why is hope so important? Well, people die without hope. That's why. It is essential. It is critical. It is absolutely necessary for life. Without hope, people die like malnourished children in war-torn countries, or like miners caught in the carbon monoxide of a deep mine where they've gotten trapped. You die when you don't have hope. And so that's why it's so critical. And that's why it's so important. And that's why it's so important that the church proclaim it, and that you believe it, and that we share it with the world. You see, hope is more than wishful thinking. Hope is more than making it a good day. Hope is more than optimistic confidence that things will get better and finally go your way and give you what you want. Somebody said, cheer up, it could be worse. And you cheered up, and sure enough, it did get worse in the realities of life. That's not hope. I like optimistic people, but hope is very, very different than optimism. Tremendously different than just optimism. Hope is the confidence that possibilities still lurk around the corner. Hope is the peace that appears when optimism flies out the window. Peace is precisely what we have when we have nothing else to cling to. Or as one of my favorite lines go, you never know that God is all you need until God is all you have. That is hope. Now, it seems to me that beyond all the hoopla and all the happenstance of the modern church marketing and all of us trying to get people to enjoy church and everything else, that underneath of all of that stuff, that people eventually come to church because they're looking for hope. I think that's what it's all about. I think that's why people come. I think that's why they come when they're bored stiff, well, even after they get here. It's because they believe deep down somewhere in their hearts that there's hope for me here and that I can find it in an act of worship. Couples come to get married. They stand before me with knees knocking and their brows sweating like crazy, hoping against hope that the marriage vows that they make with one another that God will help them keep for a lifetime. I mean, that's a far-fetched idea, isn't it? Unless God is there to give you the hope that this could really happen in the run of a lifetime. That's why people come to church. People come to church to have their babies baptized. Parents get here hoping the kid won't cry bloody murder while I throw a little water on them in the process. But there's something else going on, that parents underneath of all of this are saying deep down in their own souls, God, I got to have your help. You know that I can't do this by myself. I can't pull it off all alone. And would you please help me raise a child that's going to be a decent adult when they grow up? That's why we come to church. People come here to bury their dead with hearts so sore you can hardly touch them and eyes so full of tears that they run like rivers down a mountain stream. But they come here, they gather in church, hoping against hope that there really is something more than what appears on the scene on that particular day. That someday, that somewhere, that somehow, that sometime, sooner or later, disease will be eliminated and tears will be wiped away and we shall be reunited with those we love. That's why we come to church, is because we need hope. And the church provides us the hope we need for the living of our days. That's what it's all about. Let me tell you, incredible good news. Incredible good news. Faith is deeper than doubt. Hope is greater than despair. And one more thing, love is stronger than death. Love is stronger than death. John Merrick perhaps is the ugliest human being who ever lived on the face of the earth. A disorder known as neurofibromatosis turned John into a human freak. He was abandoned by his own mother when he was 4 years old. At 14, he was picked up by a carnival showman who nicknamed him the Elephant Man. Charged people to get in to see this freak of nature. All of this took place. It's a true story. It happened in Europe in the late 1800s. One day in London, a surgeon at a London hospital by the name of Frederick Trevis saw all the commotion across the street, walked across the street to see what was going on, paid his shilling and went in to see this pitiful, incredible pulp of humanity. But he couldn't get him off his mind. Somewhere beneath all of that, there was a human being. And Frederick wanted to find that human being. He didn't do it all at once. It took some time, a couple of years, as a matter of fact. But eventually, Frederick Trevis took John Merrick in. And he reached deep into that man's soul. And he found a human being there. And he began to treat him like a human being. And he had other co-workers and other people come around and talk with him and shake his hand and treat him like a real person. And slowly, not quickly, but slowly, and over a time, a person began to emerge. Not an imbecile, but a gentle, affectionate, lovable creature without grievance and without an unkind word for anybody on earth. Dr. Trevis kept working with the Elephant Man, you see, until eventually people would come to visit him. Just to see him, to talk with him, to understand who he was as an individual. Even the Princess of Alexander came to visit him. And John Merrick said before he died, I am happy every hour of the day. I'm happy, happy, happy every hour of the day. Now I tell you that old story to remind us today, never underestimate what love can do. Never underestimate what love can do in a life if somebody takes the time to find it. You see, I'm concerned. We live in a world fixated on the survival of the fittest. We like champions. We like stars. We like celebrities. We like everybody who's got it all together. The Elephant Man stands as a shining example of why we should not be too quick to dismiss the contributions of others who are in our midst, you see, in the hands of a loving friend. John Merrick found himself. Now there are about 20 million people in our country today who have cancer, who are survivors of cancer. The statistics tell us that by the year 2050, there will be about 50 million people who have survived and are surviving and living with cancer. You and I are welcoming home. I hope we're welcoming home. Sons and daughters, day after day, have their arms and legs blown off in this war that seems never to end. We've come to a day and time when people can live with HIV/AIDS again. I say all that to say this. What are you all going to do with us limping people? What are you going to do with us people that walk with a limp, that have the problems of life, that struggle along, that don't have it all together, are not shining bright examples to the wonderful America? Are you going to put us off to rot in some corner? Or are you going to let us limp along with you in the arenas of life where we can make a contribution to the world as it unfolds? You see, don't ever underestimate what love can do when it reaches for a person. Oh, I know. C.S. Lewis once said, if you don't want to ever get hurt, don't love anybody. If you don't want to ever have pain, don't love anybody. Don't love anything. Don't even love your dogs or cats or birds or anything else that you see. Don't love anything. Don't give your heart to anybody, anywhere, anytime, because love hurts, and sooner or later it's going to hurt, and your soul is going to be broken, and your mind's going to be perplexed, and you're going to wonder if it's worth it all, because love is costly. Well, let me tell you, it's worth it. It's worth it. As St. Augustine said, it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. Or as Solomon said in his song, many waters cannot quench love and rivers cannot wash it away. So as for me, I'll go on living and I'll go on loving and I'll go on believing and I'll go on hoping. For these three things abide, faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. Amen.